Hello and welcome to our KrausCast webinar series. My name is Amy Beecham and I'm the Marketing Director here at Kraus Financial. Today's topic is how your client's old annuity impacts their Medicaid plan, hosted by our Vice President, Thomas Kraus. First, we do have a few housekeeping items to go through. If you have any questions during today's webinar, you can go ahead and type those in the questions section of the GoToWebinar toolbar and we will answer them at the end of the presentation. Next, a copy of today's PowerPoint can be found in the handout section of the GoToWebinar toolbar. And we also ask that you please complete the post-webinar survey that will pop up on your screens at the end of the presentation, as we truly do appreciate your feedback. And now let's get to today's presentation. Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
Why, thank you, Amy. I appreciate the kind introduction, and I want to thank everybody for joining me today. It's for Q4 of 2024. Where has this year gone? It's just flown by on our end. Really excited to have you here. It's a topic that we put on annually. It's a good reminder topic of, you know, how do we deal with an annuity that's pre-existing and while we're going through the Medicaid spend down process. So it's a good reminder presentation. I know we've done it pretty much annually for the past handful of years. So it might be a reminder course for those who have sat through it before, but it is important and we'll talk through the reasons why it's important, because it's more likely than ever, in my opinion, that you're going to see clients who have these pre-existing annuities when they're going through that spend down process with your office. So just a little bit about Kraus Financial, for those of you who are not familiar. We really specialize in crisis planning, utilizing the Medicaid-compliant annuity. We pioneered some of the first Medicaid-compliant annuity products on a national scale, really working through elder law and estate planning attorneys across the country. Out of the Deficit Reduction Act 2005, we introduced to the market the short-term Medicaid-compliant annuity. So that's an annuity with a term of 24 months or less. So it was really one of the big innovations that came from our office. There's some really exciting things, I think, coming to market. We just finished our 2025 planning sessions. Really excited. I think we're going to continue with some of that innovation through some of the technology that we're going to be offering. That's going to really change the way you engage in this planning on a day-to-day basis. So really excited for that. We've also introduced a long-term care insurance division. So really working with those clients who are in the pre-planning context, we're able to work with those and put together a plan that's, you know, more fail-safe than ever. So that's something that we also offer as well as some other insurance solutions to really help, you know, protect against these long-term care costs that your clients are facing. So today's goals, I really want to cover, just talk about the landscape of the annuity market generally in the U.S. We'll talk a little bit about what is a Medicaid-compliant annuity, where does that fit in? You know, these pre-existing annuities, how do we evaluate those up against what the Medicaid rules are? We'll talk about, you know, ways to handle the different types of annuities that are not Medicaid-compliant, what can we do with them? And finally, we'll walk through some case studies to really illustrate how we dealt with pre-existing annuities for our clients and how that kind of ended up result-wise. So with that said, just setting the stage of the popularity of annuities in the U.S. are probably one of the most popular investment vehicles available. And this only has increased over the last couple years, given the interest rate environment shifting to the upside. The interest rates or the federal funds rates were at in 2023, we're at 5.5% after being at near zero for an extended period. So the guaranteed interest rates on some of these products was substantially higher than it had been in the past. And that's evident through the sales records that were hit in 2023 of $385 billion in annuity sales. I think a lot of this also coincides with the baby boomers now aging into their retirement years, where there's a big emphasis on having income in those retirement years that they can rely on. In the U.S., pension plans have kind of gone the way of the dinosaur. A lot of them have been retired, or you don't see as many pension plans being offered by U.S. companies. So a lot of people now are leaning towards annuities to really create that income for life, which pension plans used to provide. But because most companies have gone the way of the 401k, where you don't have that same income guarantee, a lot of people have utilized annuities in a similar manner where they've transitioned retirement assets into an annuity product or non-retirement assets as well to ensure that they have that guaranteed income in their retirement years. I think this trend will continue. The interest rates are starting to come down, but still, with the baby boomers coming through the system really wanting that guaranteed income, it's likely, more and more likely you're going to see clients who come to your office who have an annuity product for that guaranteed income source in their retirement years. Why is this problematic? Because, well, most seniors are going to come into your office and they're going to own an annuity, but that annuity is not going to work if we have to try to qualify them for Medicaid benefits. So when they're in that spend down process, we're going to have to analyze the annuity up against Medicaid's strict rules regarding annuities. And we'll talk a little bit about that. You know, again, why is this problematic? Because if these assets are typically going to be considered a countable asset or potentially a divestment, in most cases, these annuities are going to be considered a countable asset that has value that must be spent down. Annuity offices or Medicaid offices are very familiar now analyzing these contracts, and they know that there's a secondary market out there that exists with the J.G. Wentworths, the Peachtree Financials. So they analyze it up against that, and they know that these have value. In very rare cases, an annuity could be considered an investment if it's unable to be sold on the secondary market, but still doesn't meet the strict requirements of Medicaid eligibility. So that could be an issue that you run up against, but it's pretty rare. Most cases, the annuity, if it's, you know, they're coming into your office and they have it in place, is going to be considered a countable asset that must be spent down like other assets. The bottom line here is if your client owns an existing annuity, it will likely prevent or delay their eligibility for benefits and cost them thousands of dollars more in the nursing home bill if we don't know how to deal with them and deal with them very quickly. So we want to set the stage here a little bit and define what a Medicaid plan annuity is and what must be there for it to be considered an exempt asset or an allowable spend down. A Medicaid compliant annuity is simply a single premium immediate annuity that meets the requirements of the Medicaid program or the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005 that's been in place now for almost 20 years. In the context of Medicaid planning, it converts excess countable assets into income, allowing an individual to qualify from an economic standpoint. So there's going to be the asset test and the income test. Most individuals run up against the asset test. They have too many assets in order to immediately qualify, and that's really where the Medicaid compliant annuity comes into place. A question we get a lot, or not a lot, maybe we used to get it more so, but what if my client already owns a Medicaid compliant annuity? In short, they probably don't. Medicaid compliant annuities are really only purchased in the context of that spend down planning, so we're not going to have an annuity that's purchased or a Medicaid compliant annuity that's purchased ahead of time. We're only going to do it when we know, you know, where things stand in terms of the nursing home and individuals being in the facility and having a couple of factors there. We're not going to purchase it ahead of time because it is not really designed to be a pre-planning tool. There were a number of years where there's annuities that had, you know, Medicaid-friendly language and they could convert over to being Medicaid compliant later on. We don't see too many companies that offer that because most insurance companies really do not understand the Medicaid regulations, so it's pretty rare. There are a select handful of companies that might have some triggers that you can make it Medicaid compliant, but most cases, annuities are not going to be able to be made Medicaid compliant, especially considering the fact that most of them are purchased for a totally different reason, which is income production in their retirement years. So, again, long story short, it's most likely that they come into your office, they are not going to have an annuity that's Medicaid compliant or that can be made Medicaid compliant later. There are five strict requirements that must be there for the annuity to work with the Medicaid program. The annuity has to be irrevocable, non-assignable, actuarially sound, provide equal payments, and name the state as beneficiary. The first point being irrevocable, and when we say irrevocable, we're talking about the payment amount, the term, and the parties of the contract cannot be altered in any way, shape, or form. So that's the owner, the annuitant, and the beneficiary. Those cannot be changed for it to meet this requirement. However, most annuities purchased in the retirement planning context, you typically can't change the payment amount or the term of the annuity once it's been annuitized. However, with a simple form, sent to the insurance company, you can usually change the owner, potentially the payee, and the beneficiary in most of these cases. So again, if the contract was purchased, in the context of retirement planning, most of these are going to fail this first test. So it doesn't even, we don't even need to get to the rest of them, but we will just for illustrative purposes. Next, for the annuity to work with the Medicaid program, it has to be non-assignable. And typically there's going to be very specific language from the insurance carrier saying that this contract or the payments of said contract cannot be assigned to a third party in any way, shape, or form. And it cannot be sold on the secondary market. Most of these contracts, again, are able to be assigned either the payment or actually the ownership of the contract. They do not have this very strict language or very specific language related to the non-assignability. So that's going to be another test that they likely fail. For an annuity to work with the Medicaid program, it has to be actuarially sound. This means that the term of the annuity that we select must be fixed and equal to or less than the owner's Medicaid life expectancy. Most states deal with the Social Security Administration tables. So we're going to look at the age and gender of that individual. We're going to look at what this Social Security Administration table dictates as the longest term, the maximum term that we can select. And so long as we select that term or a term less than, it's going to work with the Medicaid program. However, a lot of these contracts, because they are designed to provide income in retirement, they may have a life component where they're going to continue to make payments for the life of the annuitant. So that's going to automatically fail this actuarially sound test because those payments can continue or will continue for the life of the annuitant, which is an undefined period of time in most cases. Or if it has a term, say it has a 10-year guaranteed term, and if that's longer than their Medicaid life expectancy, that would also fail that test. Equal payments, the contract for it to be Medicaid compliant must provide equal monthly, most cases monthly payments with no deferral or balloon payments. What we see a lot of times in the market for retirement annuities, they might have a cost of living adjustment where the annuity payment is different year to year. It might have an inflation component where it goes up by, say, 2 or 3% a year, so the payment would be different as the contract moves along. So that would fail this test as well. Finally, for an annuity to work with the Medicaid program, we have to name the state typically in the first position of the annuity as a beneficiary. There's some exceptions there. If you have a community spouse or minor or disabled child, they could be ahead of the state, but most cases we're naming the state agency as the primary beneficiary. And most annuities, especially when you're purchasing for retirement, you're not going to obviously name the state as a beneficiary. Some you can make adjustments and make those changes, but again, it would then fail that irrevocable test that we talked about first here, so that it would fail the ability to work as a Medicaid compliant annuity. So these are the five tests that must be there, and most, like I said, most of these contracts are going to fail one or more of these tests, so it will not work with the Medicaid program. So now that we've established what needs to be there for an annuity to work with the Medicaid program, well, what if my client's annuity is non-compliant, which would be the case in 99% of situations, or 95% at a minimum. If your client owns a non-compliant annuity, they typically have three options to eliminate the contract. The options can be surrender it, exchange it, or sell it. And that option that they're able to select really depends on the type of annuity that we're dealing with. There's going to be two primary types of annuities that you're going to see most frequently. It's going to be a tax-deferred annuity and an immediate annuity. And the options to deal with either or are going to be different. So we'll talk through what those are. First, when we talk about a tax-deferred annuity, what is a tax-deferred annuity? Well, a tax-deferred annuity is a contract that is with an insurance company, And it's usually a sum of funds or lump sum of funds that's attached to an underlying investment chassis, whether it's a, you know, stock related or stock tracking portfolio, or it might be a guaranteed issue rate or rate of return from the insurance carrier. Some of the stock chassis will have actually sub accounts where you can choose investments within the portfolio, and it's going to grow on a tax deferred basis until it's either annuitized or it's surrendered. Tax deferred annuity may be funded with single premium or multiple payments. And again, this is a way for people to kind of set some money aside that they maybe intend in the future to annuitize when they actually reach those retirement years to turn on that income stream. But in the interim, it's growing with the insurance company on a tax-deferred basis, so it has some advantages, in terms of being an investment vehicle down the line. With a tax-deferred annuity, the owner typically has access to the cash value of the contract and can generally make withdrawals, potentially subject to surrender charges at any time. So that is one of the advantages. It's a pretty flexible tool that most people can access when they need the funds. So how do tax-deferred annuities, I guess, interact with the Medicaid program? Well, because tax-deferred annuity has accessibility to the cash value, like I mentioned, it's going to be considered a accountable resource for Medicaid purposes and most likely must be spent down. Note that there are some exceptions that may exist, especially if we're dealing with IRA funds or qualified funds. If it's in a TDA form, it might be exempt for Medicaid purposes in your state, and that's going to be a state-specific analysis. So it really depends on the state that you're in, whether or how that will be treated. So one of the first options, can a tax-deferred annuity be surrendered? Well, yes, we established this, that the owner can surrender the tax-deferred annuity in its entirety or in portion by making a request to the insurance company to receive a cash settlement. The contract may be subject to surrender charges if it's within the surrender charge period. So if the individual established this annuity contract in, you know, the relative near term, there might be some surrender charges that they would be responsible for. And usually what we see is between 1 and 15% of the principal amount. The amount, the surrender charges usually decrease the longer that the contract has been in place or in force. In addition to the surrender charges, this is probably the bigger component that we're going to analyze here as to how we're going to deal with these contracts, is the owner is going to be required to pay taxes on any of the interest of the contract accrued. So if the contract's been in place for a large number, a long number of years, and the annuity's been accruing, tax-deferred gains, there's going to be a tax consequence that if we were to surrender it in its entirety that we have to be aware of. Because, if we're going through the spend-down process, that would be a consideration. We don't want to subject our clients to a large tax bill that could also have some secondary effects, like putting their Social Security at risk in terms of it being taxed at a higher rate, maybe their Medicare as well. So that is something we really want to be aware of when we're working with this and looking at potentially surrendering these contracts. Once liquidated, the cash can then be used to purchase or improve exempt assets during the spend down process. Again, pretty easy to move in and out of cash with these, but we have to really be aware of the tax consequence of going the surrender route. When we do see clients who do surrender these annuities, that they're usually doing it with smaller value annuities or annuities that might not have a huge tax burden related to it, this could be a good option. And it usually can be effectuated by just making that request to the insurance company. So it's a relatively low burden issue when we're dealing with this, and we can get it done in relative short order. So it's an option there, but again, I think the biggest consequence or biggest component is really looking at the tax consequence of doing that surrender. Next, can a tax-deferred annuity be exchanged? Yes, your client can do a transfer of a tax-deferred annuity into an MCA via a 1035 tax-free exchange. So this is a good option because we can take it from it's sitting with an insurance company in this tax-deferred form. We can actually transition it to an insurance company that offers the Medicaid compliant annuity, And we're not going to face any immediate taxation consequences by making that 1035 exchange. Rather, the taxes will be, if we then put it into an MCA structure that meets all those five requirements, the taxes will be applied as the payments are made. So usually what we'll do if we do a 1035 exchange is we want to spread that tax hit over a couple tax calendar years to spread out the tax consequence to avoid subjecting their Social Security or Medicare to additional taxation. So that is something that if we do go this route, we definitely want to spread the tax hit over a longer period of time. Again, this option is going to be more ideal for higher value annuities or annuities that have some significant gains or tax deferred gains. So this will help give us a better economic result when we weigh out the taxation. So how do we structure an MCA with a TDA? When a non-qualified tax deferred annuity is funded into an MCA, the transaction is, again, not a taxable event. The gain is going to be prorated over the term of the new MCAs, and usually we're going to disperse that gain over a longer multi-year annuity term because we want to minimize the tax burden to the clients. So, again, tax-deferred annuities are pretty flexible when we're dealing with a Medicaid planning context because we can surrender it, we can exchange it, so we have some pretty immediate options that we can deal with. It's not going to be a huge burden. It gets a little bit more complex when we're dealing with immediate annuities. Question is, what is an immediate annuity? Immediate annuity is going to be a contract that's either funded with a lump sum or it's been funded over a period of time that's now been elected to begin making regular payments. So again, really looking at those contracts that were used in retirement to provide those steady retirement dollars, those are the contracts that we're going to be analyzing as an immediate annuity. Periodic payments can be structured for a specific term, a lifetime, or a combination of both. For purposes of this presentation, an immediate annuity also would apply to when a TDA has been in place, but then it has been annuitized, because that's usually the typical, what we see a lot of times is people establish a TDA, and they'll fund it over a period of years, and then when they reach a retirement age, they'll turn on the immediate annuity, or they'll elect to make it into an immediate annuity, which provides those payments. So immediate annuity is a Medicaid. For Medicaid purposes, an immediate annuity may be viewed as income, a divestment, or an asset. If it meets the requirements of the MCA, which we discussed, it should only be viewed as income, because we've eliminated it as an asset, and now because it meets those five strict requirements, now it should only be considered income. I mentioned earlier that it could potentially be considered a divestment if it meets some of the requirements, but it fails some of the others. Then the Medicaid office could view it as a divestment. If it doesn't have any value on the secondary market, that could be a consideration. But in most cases, it's going to be viewed as an asset. Yeah, so the only instance that I've seen, and I haven't seen it very frequently, is if the annuity is irrevocable, meaning we can't change any parties to the contract. We say it's the beneficiary is irrevocable, or the payee and owner is irrevocable, and then it's not assignable, but it still fails one of the other tests. That would be considered an investment. Again, pretty rare. I've only come across a handful of these, reviewing these contracts pretty frequently. So it's a pretty rare occurrence, but it does happen. More commonly, immediate annuities are going to be revocable and assignable, meaning that we can change the owner, we can change the beneficiary, so we can redirect where the value of that contract is going. So therefore, it's going to be treated as an asset. So the question then becomes, well, what can I do with an immediate annuity? Can it be surrendered or exchanged? Well, no. In most cases, an immediate annuity, once it's annuitized, cannot be surrendered or cashed out. The owner is only going to be entitled to those income payments as directed by the contract. So we have no ability to say, hey, insurance company, we want to get back to cash. Do we have our money back? They're not going to allow that. They're not going to grant that. All they're going to have access to would be those payments as defined by the payment schedule in the annuity contract. Well, can I exchange it? Can I do a 1035 exchange? Can I transition this immediate annuity into another annuity contract? And the answer there is also no. An immediate annuity was not going to qualify to be transferred under that 1035 tax-free exchange. So as we can see, it's already a much more rigid opportunity here to work with an immediate annuity that the payments have been turned on. Well, the question is, well, what can be done then if my client has an immediate annuity? Well, it's going to be that third option that we talked about earlier. It can be sold for cash. That's going to be the only option in most cases. So what do we do here is we're going to take the contract out to the secondary purchasing market, which is a relatively robust market, and get it valued and sold. So then we can take those funds and then work with the resulting funds. Some clients might consider, I think they should always consider, is selling the annuity intrafamily, assuming the right dynamics exist. There has to be available funds. And, you know, I know some families, when they get to this process, there's a lot of people making decisions. And, you know, it could put some family members who have more funds than others in a advantageous position that might interfere with some of the estate planning considerations. So something to be aware of, but it is worth considering if you have the right family dynamics. Because there, as we'll talk about here later in the presentation, there would be an economic benefit to selling it intra-family. So the process of selling an immediate annuity, what does that really mean? Well, annuities are based on the life of the annuitant, so the annuity will always be tied to the original annuitant. So whoever purchased the annuity and then is the annuitant on that contract, they're always going to be considered a measuring life in relation to that annuity. So selling an annuity to the secondary market involves, we're going to typically change the primary beneficiary of the contract, and we're going to change either the owner, payee, or we're going to obtain an absolute assignment of the remaining contract payments. In sum here, we're really looking to show the Medicaid office that all the economic benefits of this contract have gone to a third party for value. So there's not going to be any remaining economic benefit from the annuity contract to that person who's going through the Medicaid spend down process. Because that's what will cause issues in terms of qualification if there's still an economic benefit left in the contract. So when we're looking at the contract provisions to go through this process, what are we looking for? Well, when we get the contract in our office, we're always going to review the contract in its whole, and the contracts are different for every carrier, as you would imagine. But what we're typically looking for is there's going to be language in it that allows for this assignment or change of ownership, change of beneficiary to the contract. So we're going to be looking for that in the annuity contract that gives us the authority that the owner of that contract has the authority to make these specific changes. And again, that's going to show that the contract is irrevocable because we're able to make these changes. So it, again, won't be utilized as a Medicaid compliant annuity. Usually, we're always going to be looking for the specific term of the contract, and we'll be looking at the death benefit language. If the annuity is only structured with a life term, that's typically not going to have a lot of value or any value on the secondary market because there's no guarantee that the client will continue to live during that period. So that's not really going to be something that's going to have value. But if there is a guaranteed period, which most annuities will have a guaranteed period, that's what we're going to be evaluating for this sale process. Also looking at the death benefit options, some contracts at the death of the annuitant will allow you to cash out the contract. So that would be a consideration in terms of valuation that these secondary companies might evaluate. A lot of contracts, I'd say most contracts that we run into, they'll either give you the option to continue the payments as structured by the original contract, or they would do a commutation value that would allow you to get back the cash, but you would take a commutation hit that would depend on the term left remaining on the contract. Next, we're going to look at how the contract was funded. And we want to make sure it's not funded with qualified monies. Most of these insurance carriers don't allow for any changes to annuities that are funded with qualified monies. And I believe that's an IRS restriction that's then passed through by these carriers. There's very strict rules with changing the ownership of an IRA funded annuity. So in most cases, we cannot sell these on the secondary market. I'd say vast majority, we cannot deal with these on the secondary market. We're going to have to figure out another solution to deal with these contracts. And hopefully you're in a state where it's exempt, so it won't be an issue. But so we're looking at contracts typically funded with non-qualified funds. So once we look through the contract and we establish that we can make changes to the ownership or the payee, we make changes to the beneficiary, you know, we analyze the contract, that there is a guaranteed portion of that contract remaining. It's a non-qualified funded contract. Then we're going to start the process of establishing what the fair market value is of that payment stream. The fair market value is defined as the price an asset would reasonably be expected to sell for on the open market. And for Medicaid purposes, we really want to go out to multiple companies to establish the fair market value, because if you get an offer from one company, I don't know if that does enough to really establish what that contract is worth. What we typically like to do is go out to at least three companies to really establish that, so there's no question by the Medicaid office that this contract is worth more than it would sell for. If the contract is not sold for fair market value, that could put the client at risk to be subject to a penalty period of ineligibility. We have seen Medicaid offices actually go out to like a J.G. Wentworth and get their own evaluation of a contract. So it is good, I think, to get multiple bids just to establish that you've done your due diligence to get the fair market value. So another consideration is, you know, how does the secondary market, how do these companies that are out in the space, how are they evaluating these annuities, and what are some of the considerations that they're looking at? Well, annuity valuations are based on the financial concept of the time value of money, and that assumes that a dollar today is worth more than a dollar in the future. So, you know, due to inflation, and especially the high inflation that we've experienced in the last handful of years, now it's, you know, under control to some extent, or at least they tell us it's under control, a dollar today is going to be worth more than a dollar in the future. So, you know, a lot of clients, when we present these offers, are like, well, why am I not receiving the full value? It's because of this concept. So what we're really looking to do is get to the present value, so the current worth of the amount to be received in the future in today's terms, in today's dollar amount. So it's going to reflect, the present value is going to reflect the actual dollar amount of the remaining annuity payments. And it's going to discount these payments into the future. The farther out that they are, the higher the discount rate is going to be. The discount rate in terms of the secondary market companies who are purchasing these, it really is the internal interest rate that these companies are using to kind of get a return on investment on their investment when they send these cash amounts to the clients. That's going to be their guaranteed interest rate on those funds. So the higher the discount rate, the lower the discount rate, the better the result is for the client. The higher the discount rate is going to be, you know, potentially a worse result. We have seen the discount rates go up semi-recently, given the interest rate environment has gone up as well. And this is due to, you know, you can go out to you can get a money market account that's now paying 5.5-6%. So the discount rate has kind of gone up, fluctuated with that. Whereas when the money market rates were much lower, the discount rates were also lower. How is the discount rate determined? I don't know if there's an exact science, but we have noticed some trends when we analyze these offers that are received for these annuities. We noticed that the number of payments remaining in the contract has an impact. The monthly payment amount has an impact. So usually the contracts that are smaller and that have a lower monthly payment amount are going to have a higher interest rate or a higher discount rate attached to them. Whereas it's a, if it's a bigger payment and maybe longer structure, the interest or the discount rate might be lower. I think it has to do with a lot of these companies kind of want a built-in minimum rate of return on the contract, and then they kind of fluctuate from there. Some of the consideration also by these companies, they're going to look at that beneficiary payout option. So if a contract has the ability to go back to cash without having to be subject to a commutation hit, those typically are valued higher than a contract that you're forced to continue the payments or are able to take the cash subject to that commutation. So these are the three primary factors that we've seen that have an impact on that discount rate. So how can we help during this process? If you have a contract or you have a client who has an annuity contract that you think is probably not compliant because they're coming to your office with it already pre-existing, we offer a complimentary annuity valuation service where we'll take a look at these contracts free of charge. We'll actually bring it out to the secondary market to get it evaluated. Again, our opportunity really lies, we'll also place offers on certain contracts as well, and we'll walk you through the process. And really our goal is to help you achieve Medicaid eligibility because timing is of the essence with these matters, so we understand the process. We want to get it done very quickly. So how does the annuity evaluation process work? Well, the first step is you're going to send us your client's annuity contract. We'll review it. We'll assess it. We'll see that it has that language that says, it can be transitioned to a third party either by way of change of ownership, change of beneficiary, assignment, et cetera. And we'll give you all of the options that may exist with that contract as it's currently in place. What we'll then do, if we determine that is the case, that it's not Medicaid compliant, it has the right language in the contract that will allow a third party to receive the benefit, economic benefit from it, then we'll bring it out to the secondary market, we'll get these written offers, and then we'll present those offers to you and your client. From there, the transfer process, your client will then accept the offer from the secondary market company. They're going to complete the paperwork, the transfer paperwork from the insurance company. We're going to overnight this, submit it electronically to the insurance carrier to get that transfer moving as quickly as possible. And then finally, your client will receive the funds, and then they can pursue the crisis planning spend down plan with those funds. Why work with us? There is a secondary, very robust market. The issue with that market, if you go to a JG Wentworth, a Peachtree, they're not as in tune with the crisis Medicaid planning, so you're going to be subject to their timelines, and usually they're going to wait for all the ink to dry and all the transfer paperwork and to actually have the transfer approved by the insurance company before they'll release the funds. So that process could take up to 3 months, we've seen in the past working with these companies. And those of you who are, avid crisis planning practitioners know that timing is everything. So a month of that we have to wait for this transfer to happen, that's a month that we lost Medicaid eligibility, which could be, $10,000 or more in benefits that we lost. So really timing is everything. Time is of the essence. That's why our process, we really shortened that process from start to finish down to as little as a week, because we know we need to get this through the system so you can take those funds and do the Medicaid spend down plan. So again, we've I think perfected this program in a way to do this very efficiently. So next we'll walk through some real life case examples to kind of showcase this process. So our first example, we had a 74-year-old client. They had an annuity that was preventing their Medicaid eligibility. So they came into the attorney's office. We reviewed the annuity. It was issued by Allianz. It was initially established as a 120-month guaranteed annuity. So it was going to provide 120 monthly payments, and that was a guaranteed portion. There was an initial premium of $114,595 that was invested in this annuity. It was going to provide a monthly payment of $1,043.90. And the payments on this particular annuity began on May 26, 2016. So when we look at the valuation and transfer process, there were 62 payments made at this time. So we're going back in time a little bit. So bear with me. And so there were $64,721.80 of payments made. When we purchased this contract back in 2021, we are always going to look at what's the next payment that's going to be made, and then what's the last payment, and that gave us a remaining number of guaranteed payments of 58. So we knew that the total amount remaining in payments was $60,546.20. So we brought this contract out to the secondary market. We obtained three offers, and we actually placed an offer on this contract as well. And as you can see, there's a pretty big difference in what the offer amounts came to. The first company, we'll start with company D, offered $38,575. So that resulted in a discount rate of 20% or over 20%, which is pretty significant. So that was the amount that company would have made in a guaranteed annual rate of return on that $38,000 invested to receive those 58 remaining payments. So again, this is why we like to go to multiple companies, because we're going to get the best result for the client, with company A in this instance, offering $46,912, a discount rate of almost half at 11.43. So the client in this situation selected company A's offer on July 18th, and the funds were received by July 29th. So it was a very quick turnaround time. So with that $46,912.20 in hand, and the non-compliant annuity eliminated, the client was then able to proceed with crisis planning in that month of July. So we were able to use those funds. We put it into place a gifting and MCA plan in order to spend those funds down. And in this case, because we were up against the clock of getting this done before the end of the month, we actually sent a portion of the cash directly to the Medicaid compliant annuity company to expedite the purchase of the annuity. And we do this pretty regularly, where if we purchase the contract, we'll actually send the funds directly to the carrier, so we don't have that delay of sending the funds to the client and then they have to send it to the carrier, because we do run up against this clock very frequently. The remaining funds were then wired to the client on the same day, and the client was able to complete the gift before the month's end. So again, a very efficient way to get rid of this problem asset, when we're up against the clock. So example two, we have an 84-year-old client that has an annuity that's preventing his Medicaid eligibility. In analyzing the contract, it was a Voya Financial lifetime annuity, but there's 120 monthly guaranteed payments. So there's a guaranteed portion, but then there was a portion that would continue to pay out so long as the client was living. The initial premium of this contract was $241,322.56, and it was generating a monthly payment of $2,096.83. The payments on this contract began on June 1st, 2019. So again, going to the contract, we reviewed it. It had language in it that allowed it to be transferred to a third party for value. So what did we do? We looked at the payments that have been made. There was 46 payments of the 120 guaranteed that have already been made. So 96,000 had already gone back to the client. So we're really looking at what's remaining of that guaranteed portion of the contract. And here, in this instance, the next payment was on 4/1/2023. The last guaranteed payment was 5/1/2029. So there's 74 remaining payments, guaranteed payments, for a total amount of $155,165.42. One note here, when we're purchasing, or these contracts are being evaluated, of these lifetime annuities where we have a guaranteed portion and a lifetime portion, in those, we're going to be purchasing both the guaranteed and the lifetime payments. So we're not going to leave any chance that there's going to be an economic benefit left to the client, because that could, again, cause those eligibility issues. So here, as you can see, we went out, again, received three offers. We also placed an offer on this contract. Much tighter band here, and I think this, again, has to do with the payments being a little bit larger, you know, just being a little bit over a five-year contract as well, or remaining payments. So the offers came in at a discount rate between 12.36 and a discount rate of 9.85. And in this case, the client accepted Company A's offer on March 10th, and the funds were received by the client on March 30th. So again, a pretty quick turnaround time. The crisis plan that we implemented here, with the $116,000 cash in hand and the non-compliant annuity eliminated, the client was able to proceed with the crisis planning by the end of the month in March. Again, same thing here. We did the gift MCA plan, and we did the same thing where we expedited the funds to the Medicaid compliant annuity insurance carrier, and then the remaining funds were available to the client to make the gift and complete the plan in that same month. So very efficient way to deal with these problem assets. So I know we covered a lot of material, but Amy, do we have any questions that have come through?
Yes, we do. Okay, first question here. My client's annuity is currently paying out only for life. Is it possible to sell that contract?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we do see this a lot of times, especially with older clients who may have had that annuity paying out for a number of years. A lot of annuities are structured with 5 or 10 year guaranteed periods. And then once they are beyond that time frame, now it's into the life portion of the contract. In the vast majority of cases that we see, the life portion is not going to have any value. It's going to either have zero or very nominal value on the secondary market, because those payments are not guaranteed. If the client were to pass away, which, you know, in their older years could happen at any time, there's just no way to really evaluate the contract, you know, utilizing some of the analysis that we talked about before, the time value of money, et cetera, or you know, getting it down to a present value. So what we recommend in these cases is to get refusal letters from these same companies that state basically that this contract has no value. And we like to get that contract treated as just an income payment versus having to treat it as an asset. Or if it is treated as an asset, it should only be treated as being worth $0 or a very nominal sum. So yeah, usually we're not going to be able to sell these, but we want to establish that the value is zero or nil, basically, in order to not, you know, have this cause this eligibility issues.
All right, next question here. For an annuity that would be a divestment, is it still considered a divestment if it was purchased more than 5 years ago?
Yeah, this is a question as well that we run into. What our analysis is, if the contract was purchased post DRA, which or put into effect post DRA, which most have at this point, given the DRA was implemented in most states in 2006, you're going to still have to analyze the annuity against those rules that are in the DRA, which are those 5 requirements. So therefore, it's pretty unlikely that the contract is, you know, going to be outside of that. There's not really the 5-year look back analysis that, you know, applies to most gifts. We're going to still have to analyze it against it. In most cases, we're going to determine that's going to be an asset that we have to deal with. So we're not going to just be able to say, oh, well, it's purchased 5 years previous, that we don't have to worry about it. We still have to consider it as an asset and then deal with the available options at that point, which is going to be typically selling the contract.
All right. A few more questions just came in here. If an annuity, and I'm assuming in this case that annuity has cash value, if they're considering that as part of the community spouse resource allowance, does it still need to be Medicaid compliant in any way?
Yeah, that's a good question. You could still run into issues potentially, but you could make the argument that they can keep the contract as part of the community spouse resource allowance, but you have to work with the Medicaid office to establish, you know, what the value is of that contract. And then we want to make sure you know, the payments being directed in a certain manner that it works with the underlying spend down plan. So that is an option. we do see that occasionally, but a lot of times, you know, the clients like the flexibility of being able to just work with the cash as opposed to trying to work that into the overall plan, but definitely a consideration to take a look at.
Another question here, are there other types of contracts that can be valued on the secondary market?
Yeah, we see land sale contracts, so usually those are intra-family or, yeah, there's usually some relation to the parties where they might have sold a piece of land and then it's the land is the security for the loan. So that is a contract so long as there is something securing the loan that can be evaluated in a pretty similar manner. The process is a little bit different. We have to do actually, you know, an analysis of the value of the property. So more moving parts to that transaction, but it is something that we see pretty regularly. Also, we see lottery payments occasionally or structured settlement payments. And both of these are a little bit different. They require a court order in order to change the direction or those have those payments go to that third party versus just working directly with the insurance carrier. So more moving parts there as well, but we do run into those occasionally that I think the same issues are kind of there that they do have some value on the secondary market because there is a pretty robust secondary market for lottery payments and structured settlements. So similar issue, just more hoops to jump through in terms of getting those payments transferred to a third party.
All right. And we did have a few more questions come in. They do look a little case specific. So we will definitely follow up with you all on those questions. And again, if anybody else has any questions that are case specific, please feel free to throw those in the questions section, or when you're filling out that survey, you can put those in there as well. And then we will certainly reach out, get the information we need, and then get you the answers that you need. Otherwise, a recording of this webinar will be available shortly through your Attorney Access account. If you haven't already created an account, you can head on over to krausfinancial.com/join to get started. Signing up is quick and easy and gives you access to all of our latest educational content and long-term care planning resources. And I want to thank you again, Tom, for your great presentation today. And thank you for everyone to joining us and for the great questions. Again, we will certainly follow up with you. And I hope you all have a great afternoon.
Thank you, everyone.